You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
We still haven't got that unbleached.
I forgot about that, yes.
So, Alan, how's it going?
Oh, it's summer school. That's how it's going. So,
is that good?
Well,
does that mean you're getting work done?
Yeah, right. I've had a two-hour lecture this morning, got a two-hour lecture this afternoon.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
No. So summer school. You didn't get much of a break since, like, before?
No.
Okay.
No, not really. But, you know, that's what we get paid for.
The life of an academic.
Amen.
So, DNA sunscreen.
Yeah.
What's this about?
Well, this is a really good idea because if you're going to make a sunscreen, the obvious thing to make it of is the stuff that's going to get damaged by the sun. So.
Ah, I see. Okay.
The whole reason that we need sunscreen is because the sun puts out all of these nasty ultraviolet rays, which are very, very, very high energy, and we can absorb those. And what can happen is that those very energetic ultraviolet rays can knock your DNA around to the point where it starts knocking electrons off things. And when that happens, you get these nasty things called free radicals, which are horribly, horribly reactive and will react with anything. And that's one of the ways that you can mutate DNA.
It's just an interesting term there, free radicals.
Yes, I know.
So, and is that when that means your DNA stops replicating?
Well, it's when you start sort of damaging it so that now it's not what it is meant to be. So it can still replicate, but now it might be cancerous. And so that's the way that you start getting cancerous cells and everything.
And
so.
Also wrinkles?
And wrinkles, yes, yes. Well, that's a natural aging process, but
speeds up by the sun, right?
Yes, seemingly, yes, yeah, and probably, you know, just due to damage of your skin, et cetera, by the ultraviolet rays in the sun. So, somebody was obviously thinking about this and saying, okay, so we know that DNA absorbs ultraviolet radiation. Okay, what you want in a sunscreen is something that's going to absorb the ultraviolet radiation and stop it getting to your DNA. So that's why you plaster yourself in all of this, you know, white goop every sunny day. So, and in this white goop that you plaster yourself with are chemical compounds that absorb the ultraviolet rays from the sun, so meaning that your DNA is unaffected. So and people were thinking, and obviously, and thinking, right, well, if DNA absorbs the UV rays from the sun, why not make a sunscreen out of DNA? And then we know for sure that it's going to absorb all the rays of the sun. And so they thought that this might be a good idea. And then they also found out that, interestingly, when they were sort of trialing this stuff, that the more they exposed it to the ultraviolet radiation, the more ultraviolet radiation it actually absorbed, which is kind of weird because your sort of modern sunscreens and stuff, they only last a certain time because you're sweating and everything and it washes off, et cetera, et cetera. But it certainly doesn't increase its protection over time. These DNA films that they've put on sort of biological samples and subjected to UV radiation, they increase the amount of effectiveness. Basically, they become more effective over time, the more sun that they're exposed to, which sounds totally weird. But what happens is that that's the process of DNA being sort of damaged, if you will. So your double helix turns into a single helix, and that absorbs more light than the double helix does. So it really is kind of a really cool idea, this.
So is it living tissue? Is that the... I mean, that's the spooky part for me.
No. It'll just be just bulk standard DNA.
So how does it adapt? Is my question, like...
What is bulk standard DNA?
Bog standard. Yeah, yeah. So they just extract DNA from, you know, whatever. And
is this allowed?
What's the whatever? Is it rats or rabbits?
That they didn't really go into.
Bacteria?
I'd have to say. Yeah.
Suspicious.
So they were not too, you know, forthcoming on the details with that.
Aren't there safety concerns around DNA and touching skin?
Oh, are you just trying to make me look dumb on radio? Come on. possibly. And again, I don't know enough about this to say whether that's the case or not. But, you know, it's something that you'd probably have to be a bit careful with, I would have thought. However, having said that, they wouldn't be doing all these trials and stuff if it wasn't safe. You would think.
Yeah.
You would hope.
My concern with this is if it's getting better the more UV radiation,
yep.
it's absorbing, I guess, then if you left this on for long periods of time, especially over summer, wouldn't that lead to vitamin D deficiency and things like that?
I don't think it's that effective.
Okay.
It's not stopping absolutely everything coming through, okay? But it's, you know, it's stopping a certain amount. So, and the beauty of this, it's sort of transparent, and it also apparently holds the moisture in your skin, so it's just, there's your wrinkles thing.
It sounds sort of very... I'm a lifeguard, so I spend a bit of time in the sun, and indeed. I know people that actually just don't use sunblock at all, right, because of your face. Yeah, because of the risks of cancer or the chemicals and that sort of thing.
Oh, dear, oh dear. Okay. You brought that up, and that's a good point, okay, because there are some... Well, there's certainly questions about some of the things that are used in sunscreen, and in particular titanium dioxide.
And particularly the damage that can do to the water and yes. creatures in the water.
Yep, yep, indeed. However, you'd think there's the sum total of stuff that's going into the water is probably not truckloads, you'd have to say, if you're going to be brutally honest. But yeah, you're right. There are things in some sunscreens that people have questioned, particularly titanium dioxide. I've got a good mate over at University College London who studies this sort of stuff, and he will not let his kids wear any sunscreen that's got titanium dioxide in it, because that apparently could conceivably promote all these nasty free radicals and stuff, and people, you know, they're a bit uncertain about that. So, yeah, but geez, not wearing anything at all.
Risky.
Risky, I'd say, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, let's move on to the next one. The second topic, we're looking at some potential home health tips.
Mm.
So the cleaning of fruit, right? We often need to clean our fruit or rinse it at least.
Yep.
Can you tell us a bit more about this story?
Okay, so for the most part, you've got to put pesticides on fruit to keep the nasties away. Even organic fruit has got pesticides in it. They're just sort of heavily regulated sort of pesticides, so-called natural, quote-unquote. I'm doing the air commas here for people. Pesticides. So the idea is you obviously got to get rid of that before you eat it, which is only common sense. And so what apparently orchards and stuff do is that once they pick the fruit, they then use a sort of a germicidal bleach. So they wash the fruit with a germicidal bleach, which apparently kills the germs and supposedly gets rid of the pesticides. Okay. And so there was a study in 2015, the Department of Agriculture in the US, and they found that 85% of fruit contained pesticide residues, but of those residues, 99% were harmless. So basically 99% of the samples contained so little that they were deemed to be safe. So there's not a lot of pesticide residues out there, obviously, but still people hear this sort of thing, you know, pesticide residues, they can't be good for you. How do you get rid of them? So normally you just, you know, rinse your fruit under the tap, particularly apples. So these guys were studying apples, and these were workers in the States. And so what they did was to take some organically grown apples that didn't have any pesticides on them to begin with, and they then sprayed them with a couple of common pesticides that are used. In the same quantities that would be used by the orchardists. And they then tested three solutions. So they tested this germicidal bleach that is used commercially. They tested water, and they tested good old sodium bicarbonate, okay, baking soda dissolved in water. And of the three, it was found that sodium bicarbonate was by far and away the best, and that actually left no pesticide residues. The other two, they did some serious analysis, and they found that they removed most but not all of the pesticides, whereas the sodium bicarbonate removed it all. So what you had to do was to just put your apple into your sodium bicarbonate solution about 15 minutes, wash it off with water, and voila, it's all good as gold.
15 minutes?
15 minutes is a while, yes, yes. The reason that sodium bicarbonate works is because it's basic. It's a little bit basic, and the base actually destroys the pesticide molecules.
So not basic as in insult, basic as in science.
As in science, yes, yes. Yep.
Ruben, you had a question?
Here we go. Is it a basic compound, though?
Yes, sodium bicarbonate, yes, it is. I mean, absolutely, come on. Did you do first year chemistry?
No, I didn't.
Well, yeah. I'm running the summer school course right now, Ruben. You know, the next lecture starts at 1:45. I think you should come. Yeah.
Also, baking soda is really good for getting rid of blood stains.
That's actually helpful. Thanks, Ruben.
Thanks, Ruben.
Indeed, yes. So, you know, that's kind of important, I think. And so if you are really worried about your pesticides out there in Radioland, then sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, that's your stuff. Make up a little solution, soak your apples in it, wash them off, all done.
Thanks for letting us know. Final story, scientists in court. Seems there's a new story about a scientist in a dubious peer-reviewed journal article. There seems to be a lot of these recently.
Oh, boy, there always boy. Is. It's just like a long-running thing on Dear Science.
Well, this seems to be a particularly thin-skinned scientist, and I really should be careful what I say because he's obviously litigious. So, you know, even though you're on the other side of the world, you never know what might happen. But
I'm pretty sure everybody listens to us on Wednesdays.
At Stanford, absolutely. Yes.
Definitely.
So this is a Stanford engineering professor by the name of Professor Mark Jacobson. And he published a paper a couple of years ago on whether or not you could basically power the entire US energy grid using renewable sources. So sort of your solar, your wind, your hydro, all of that sort of stuff. And he published this paper in a thing called the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, very prestigious journal. So you've got to be really good to get in there. And he's at Stanford, so he's got to be really good as well. And then earlier on this year, some folk from a private company also published in the same journal, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, basically saying that Jacobson's work was basically incorrect, that he'd made a lot of assumptions and stuff, that he'd done some modelling which wasn't right, that he'd made a lot of assumptions that were unsubstantiated, and that's basically what they said. I mean, the exact quote, one of the exact quotes from the paper, the work used invalid modelling tools, contained modelling errors and made implausible and inadequately supported assumptions. Okay? Now, because of this, this guy, Professor Jacobson, is suing Professor Christopher Clack, Christopher Clack, who is from this private company, plus he's suing the National Academy of Sciences for $10 million.
What, for, like, defamation?
For libel, yeah.
My question really quickly is, were the findings that you could power the United States or you couldn't?
Well, that's the
thing.
What's
being negated?
Well, this is the way that science works, okay? So Jacobson's coming along and saying, yes, you can. And this guy Clack is then coming along and saying, well, no, you can't, because I think that you've made some errors here. And so the next logical frickin' step in the process is that then Jacobson comes along and refutes that paper. Okay, if this guy Clack has made some, you know, erroneous arguments himself, then Jacobson publishes another paper and say, no, I'm sorry, you're wrong. But
no, it's not.
No, he's gone to the
you try and make a quick buck.
A quick lots of bucks.
But even if he even if he wins and he gets the money, that doesn't necessarily prove point.
No, that doesn't prove a damn thing, unfortunately. So, you know, this is all about libel and defamation and everything. So then it ends up in the courts and, you know, the truth gets lost in the legal process.
Yeah, the actual experiment that should have been done.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So this is really rather frightening, that if you publish a paper and then somebody says, nah, I think you're wrong, that your next avenue then becomes the courts. That's not the way
this is fake
works.
News and this, science.
Oh, jeez.
We won't go there. We won't get into it.
But it is. It's truly appalling. It's not the way that science should work. And I guess watch this space. We'll keep an eye on whether does go to court.
Because this would set quite a big precedent, would it?
And sadly, no, because people have gone to the courts before, but the people who go to the courts or who have done this before tend to be people who have published stuff that's fraudulent and they've been called out by somebody else. And in order to stop losing face, they then go and try and sue them. And every sort of example of that has failed in the courts. So, but this guy seems to be on the level. This guy from Stanford, he's, you know, he doesn't seem to be fraudulent or anything like that. It seems to be an on the level, bog standard paper. And then this other guy has come along and given a bog standard criticism of this paper. And geez, you don't then go to the bloody courts because somebody says that your modelling's wrong or something.
I feel like the sad thing about this is it's a study that's sort of detrimental to society in a way. I mean, it's such an important thing to work out, especially to do with the environment.
Yep.
And the fact that there's no opportunity, well, not opportunity, but no, he doesn't have the desire to defend his own thing, but instead is jumping straight to suing someone. I feel like it sort of diminishes the power of the...
I couldn't have put that better myself. Yeah. Out of the mouths of babes, there we go.
Okay, let's end it there. Alan has to leave us shortly, I assume, to get back to summer school.
Well, we've got a
busy
lots
time
to do. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you for coming in, and
my pleasure.
We will see you next week.
Shall do.
And for everybody else, we'll be back shortly.
That was Dear Science. That was
was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.